Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and other musicians, uncover their life stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, then stick around. You're in the right place. Hey guys, my podcast host, Libsyn, is currently offering listeners of Everyone Loves Guitar a special deal. So if you're looking to start a podcast of your own, you can get up to 2 months of free podcast service with Libsyn, along with free tutorials and videos showing you how to create, record, and promote your podcast. So go to libsyn.com and use the promo code ELG, as in Everyone Loves Guitar, to get up to 2 months free and to get started. And just to be transparent, yes, I will get a very small affiliate commission if you sign up, but know that I'm promoting this because I've been with Libsyn since day one, and in close to 900 episodes, I've literally never had a problem, and their support is excellent. So go to libsyn.com and use promo code ELG and get up to 2 months free to get started. Hey everybody, this is Craig Garber. Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar. I'm with Zach Amster from the band Abrams. These guys are an awesome band. They have a brand new album out, and I think it's going to break them through, but let me get into Zach's background. Zach's an incredibly talented singer, lead guitarist, and the primary songwriter of the psychedelic rock band Abrams. Is that okay to call you psychedelic rock?
We'll take it, man.
All right. All right. He grew up in Southern California with his twin brother, who's a professional drummer in the bands Mondo Generator and Nebula. So I got turned on to his Abrams, which is the name of Zach's band. I'm on the email list of Small Stone Recordings, which is the record label, which if you're into psychedelic rock, check out Small Stone. They got tons of great artists. And so they put out an email about this new record, and I usually check out almost everything they put out, and I listened to it, and I'm like, holy shit, this is amazing. I mean, it's like you know how people might have heard when you first heard, I don't know, Led Zeppelin 4 or something like that. It's just a great psychedelic rock record. And so I reached out to Zach, and he was kind enough to come on the show. Zach and bass player Taylor Iverson started Abrams when they met each other in Boulder, Colorado. The new album, it's their fourth record. It's called In the Dark. That's the record I heard. And again, I think this is a real breakout record for these guys, and I wanted to support it, and I'm excited to have Zach on the show to talk about it. He is a gear whore. So, check. And you could check out some of their YouTube videos, man. There's some cool stuff on there. You just had something like a short clip on Instagram last week, and it sounded great. I don't know how you were you recording into purposefully with that,
dude. That was just someone's iPhone recording. These iPhones really? These days have just insane, recording sound with them, and they sound great. Yeah, so I just stole that from wherever I found it, and I was like, oh, let's post it. Yeah.
Oh, it's great. Yeah. That was very. I can't believe it's an iPhone. Yeah, because because like let's say 3-4 years ago, the quality of the recordings on an iPhone wasn't that good, and then you'd have somebody in an arena and they're in like row 10 post it, and then you'd have some idiot say, oh, that guy's sound is awful.
yeah
I mean, the only
you
thing
never you really trust like the iPhone recording, man, but like just technology gets better every day, so I mean they sound fantastic. Like it sounds good enough for us to post on Instagram.
it was great, man. All right. So you grew up listening to a lot of your dad's classic rock. What prompted you and your brother to start playing instruments?
Yeah, man. Well, hey, thanks for having me. Stoked to be here. Kind words. I mean, you mentioned Led Zeppelin up front and Abrams. I'm like, we'll take that any day.
It's a great record.
Well, thanks, bro. Yeah, my dad was a huge, classic rock guy. I remember growing up, he just shown, Neil Young, Crazy Horse, Springsteen, all that down my brother and I's, throats. What really, I guess, kind of attracted me to the guitar in general, honestly, was I'll never forget just watching Neil Young jamming on his Les Paul, he calls Big Black, I think.
Yeah.
And
the three,
just hitting the whammy, dude. Just like on like a, rocking the Free World solo, just watching him dance around like a madman. I was like, I want to do that. Yeah. And, and then never really looked back since, he kind of just got me into guitar rock, and my brother and I were pretty much hooked since then.
That's very. Would you watch Russ Never Sleeps? Was that where you saw that?
Yeah, I think what it was. I mean, Russ Never Sleeps, great live record. But I remember the one that sticks out to me was when they did Rockin' the Free World with Pearl Jam at the at the like VMAs or something. And like Eddie's up there all pissed and Neil's all pissed. And he's just, it's just like, geez, just like you can just feel it coming through the TV. And like, I don't know, man, that performance is one of the greatest live performances ever.
That's cool.
So that's, yeah, man. Got hooked ever since.
Well, yeah, you were pretty obsessed with music and guitar and gear from early on, but you started writing songs when you were 10. That's pretty young. How did that come about?
Yeah, well, I remember, you know, telling my folks I wanted to play guitar, and they were really supportive, you know, with pretty much everything, just great, great upbringing from my folks. Got me a guitar, got me into lessons. And I remember quitting. Like, I took lessons for maybe a year or two, and then I was like, you know, too much homework, you know, like go home, study your tabs, you know, do this. And I was like, you know, not really interested anymore. And then one day I remember picking it back up again. I remember buying like Metallica's Black album, and I was like, oh, this is sick. Like, and that got me excited to pick up the guitar again. I kind of relearned, you know, on my own, and you know, just basically learned how to read tabs and learn songs. And then I got really into, you know, just messing around with different tunings, weird stuff like that, and would just kind of write riffs and experiment and kind of just mess around with it. Just really, you know, back then, obviously there's no social media, there's way less distractions, and the way I remember like being happy and entertained and I don't know, just inspired was through music, and more specifically in guitar, because that's what I did for, you know, hours on hours on hours on end. So that kept me really busy as a kid.
What were you playing back then, guitar wise? What kind of guitar did they get you?
Dude, they got me a Mexican Strat, like a black Mexican Strat, which is a good.
That's a good first guitar.
Your first guitar. Very good. I still have it, actually. I think my brother has it, actually. He's a drummer trying to write songs, you know. Mm-hmm. Drummers always want to write songs. So here's some strings, dude. Go figure it out. But yeah, Mexican Strat through like some shitty amp. I don't know, probably like a Crate or something.
Right.
But yeah, that's
that's a pretty good first guitar.
That's kind of how it all started.
Yeah,
man. Yeah, for sure, man. Yeah.
So how did you first get Abrams up and running? I know you and Tyler met in, I think, Boulder. But how did you put the band together, and what were some of the challenges early on in the beginning?
Yeah, that's a good question. We both went to school out here in Boulder, but we didn't really know each other. We started hanging out in the same, you know, bars and acquaintances. And, this was kind of post college, right after college. And then, you know, I remember like we frequent this bar that would play like, you know, heavy rock, heavy metal. Like they'd have like Caius on the jukebox and like Monster Magnet, High on Fire. And I was like, oh, these people actually exist. Cause you know, that was like the hard part, especially being in like a hippie town like Boulder, to find people, you know, with the same musical interests as me. That was the hardest part, honestly. It was kind of finding people who just didn't want to play in jam bands, you know.
There's a lot of like still, Fish and Mo and stuff like that out there.
Yeah.
Interesting.
A lot of Fish, a lot of Grateful Dead, a lot of hippie music and bull. Not really a lot of, you know, like heavy music out there, but we met, we started hanging. We just, you know, started, a lot of our friends, his mutual friends, my mutual friends were playing in bands around town, and, you know, past efforts didn't work out. And we were like, we should start a band. And we did. We started as like a 3-piece, like 2013 or something, almost 10 years ago, which is crazy to say. And, the hardest part was, like I said, finding musicians who want to jam similar, you know, music that you want to jam. Cause other than that, those early days, like we didn't really take ourselves too seriously. It was a lot, not that it's not fun now, but it was a lot more laid back. And when it's more laid back, it's kind of, it's just a lot of fun. You're just hanging out with friends and playing shows and, kind of gaining some notoriety around town, the local Denver scene. We moved to Denver, which, you know, has a pretty good heavy rock scene. So, okay. We fit in nicely here.
Had you been in bands before that? Or was this like really your first band, you know, first like formal?
I played in like a stoner rock band called Black Acid Devil.
And, wait a minute. Black Acid Devil. Yeah, that sounds like one of those things. Like, here's the formula for your band's name. What color are your underwear? Dude, exactly. What's the last drug you took? And what's the cartoon character you most recently saw on TV?
Great band name, dude. But I joined this band. Dude, they have a really great record. I think it's self-titled. I don't even remember, but I joined them. Taylor actually used to be in that band. Black Ass Devil is actually the name of like the worst Danzig record.
Oh, is it?
In my opinion, it's a Danzig record that came out in the 90s. He was doing some weird stuff. So they stole that. And I play guitar with them, left, you know, when I was in the band. So that's kind of how we met. And then, you know, I was like, you know, I'm kind of want to start something a little different. And, you know, then we joined Abrams.
And you did. What made you move to Denver?
College. So yeah, from Southern California.
Where in Southern California?
Orange County. Okay. So like Mission Viejo specifically is where I grew up. Pretty born suburban town. But great place to grow up, man. Like, you know, Southern California can't beat it.
No.
but moved to Boulder in like 2007. Great party school. A lot of fun. I want to go back, man.
To Boulder?
To those years in Boulder.
Oh, I know. It's so good when you had no responsibility, isn't it?
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
So once you put, and I never ask about names, but like, what is Abrams? How did you,
you asked.
I know. I hate to ask because it's like, and everybody asks you, how'd you get your name? And I'm not trying not to, but
we
it's
get it a lot.
It's Don't such an unusual, it. You know. Where'd it come
That's
from?
A good question, man. I personally hate naming things.
Uh-huh.
We always like fight over like song names, especially names of the album. Like that will probably delay our album release another 6 months because we can't agree on an album name that no one really gives a shit about. But the name Abrams, honestly, it was like, all right, this one's not taken. Like,
domain.
Yeah, pretty much. And like, it was unique. And it was like, all right, it's like a tank. You know, it's like we were kind of tough back then. Our first couple records were pretty, you know, like more in the like hardcore noise rock, like sludgy kind of realm, more punk.
Definitely more punk.
So we're like, Abrams, like, you know, it just felt right. And it wasn't taken. So. They're like, screw it. Let's move on. Let's just write songs and, you know, keep going. So
I'm surprised you said about the name because all the names of all the track names, you know, on the new record are great. I mean, very logical.
I like them too.
Yeah. It really fits.
We might just like think a little too hard on it, you know, you know, we're strong minded individuals that sometimes clash a little bit, which is good though. You know, it's like we have some good discourse and some good discussion and arguments.
Do you know,
we like to argue.
Do you guys like to argue? As you get older, you won't. It's just like, this is fucking ridiculous. Why am I wasting my time? Do you know this band in Sweden called Dozer?
Oh, yeah.
Dozer and Greenleaf. So I had Tommy Jalapa, who's the guy behind those two bands. And so I was asking about Greenleaf. I said, do you guys like smoke a lot of weed? He goes, no, I've never smoked weed in my life.
Yeah.
And I'm like, where had you come up with that? He goes, oh, he just picked it because it sounded like a stoner rock name. And I'm like, I was asking about some of his lyrics because honestly, sometimes we just pull out a magazine and take the article and that's our lyrics. And I'm like, okay.
I love that, dude. Like, it's like, you know, some people just like, it's has nothing to do with the personality, the person who's writing the song. It's like,
yeah,
for great, those are great bands, Greenleaf and Dozer. I think Dozer put something out on Small Stone back in the day, but
yeah, it's not, they're not around anymore. Yeah, I love them. I love both those bands. Yeah,
I love all that like stoner stuff that's like super groovy and catchy. Yeah. And like to me, that's like the best part about that music. It's like I'm not really listening to Greenleaf for the lyrics, right? Like I'm like a riff guy. Like, oh, this is sick. You know, the vocals sound great.
And yep.
Yeah. I'm all for it.
Okay. So what did you guys get like a first break? Did Abrams get a first break once you're up and running?
We're still looking for one, man.
Well, I honestly, man, if this record doesn't do it for you, I'd be shocked. You know, yeah. Honestly, it's really a great record.
I appreciate that. It's getting some good attention. It's getting a lot of spins out there in the streaming universe, you know, and we're about to start touring. So, we're super happy on it, but,
well, you said you're doing a lot of interviews too.
Oh yeah, man. That's like, press has been good.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're doing a lot of interviews. We're getting the name out there. And yeah, people are mentioning, you know, it's going to be on their, they're talking album of the year list and stuff like that. So that's all good news to me, man. I'm just happy to write music. And if people listen to it, that's great. And if they like it, that's just icing on the cake.
Sure, man.
You know, we always want more. I mean, we're specifically personally, I'm very driven and
yeah.
You know, I want this to get in the ears as many people as possible. But yeah, we've been a band for like 10 years, about almost 9 years. And, you know, we've done the whole DIY touring circuit, you know, book your own tours, which we're still doing. And, you know, I mean, starting, you know, 2015, we were just road dogging it really in a van, just going on like shitty 4-week tours and just, you know, kind of building a reputation, building a name, for ourselves and locally, nationally, just kind of hitting it hard. And that's what we're going to continue to do, this coming next year. So
I always wonder, you know, I talked to different people and I knew you were driven, just so I could tell, you know, when we first had our initial conversation, what do you think makes you so driven? Cause I think that's a tough question to answer.
Yeah, that's a tough question. But I think it's my upbringing, really. Both my folks, very hardworking individuals. And you know, that they kind of instilled those values in me from a young age, I think. And you know, when I'm passionate about something as much as music, especially, you know, this band, and it's kind of really where I tend to put most of my energy is Abrams, which can be a little dangerous. You know, you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. You got to, you know, kind of take a little step back, and there's more to life than just, you know, one little band. But it's really, you know, kind of what gets me up in the morning is, just writing guitar, writing riffs, you know, writing songs, performing them in front of people, demoing, you know, all of it. It's just like, you know, without it, I'd be in an insane asylum. Probably I'd be bored as hell.
Yeah.
Cause I'm bored, you know, doing it now, but like it gives me energy and passion. When you find that one like riff or that one hook, that one vocal line, and then, you know, you start writing it and then it comes out 3 years later and you're like, oh, finally, and people are digging it. Sweet. It's just very rewarding. And yeah. But my folks, to answer your question.
Thanks. Yeah, I always think it's upbringing in for that thing. It's a hard one to nail down. All right, so it's really interesting. I listened to all four of your albums. And like basically the first two albums, as you mentioned earlier, it sounds like a completely different band. Even though I think it's the same four guys, except I think your brother played drums for some of those first two records, but what happened between 2 and 3? It was just, completely it's not different. Like better or worse. You're it's just right. Different.
Completely different. We could have, and maybe even should have changed the name, but no, I mean, you're right, dude. The first two records, especially the first one was, you know, what I love about our records, we got four records. You can hear like a really cool, chronological like growth of
evolution. Yes, 100%.
Yeah. So that first record, like I was touching on earlier, it's very, you know, kind of hardcore, you know, heavy rock, just like hit record and go. You know, we're doing experimenting with like weird time signatures, a lot of screaming vocals, you know, it was pretty in your face and on 10 for the entire record. So those first two records were kind of like that. And, you know, definitely way more heavy in noise and, aggression.
Yeah.
We get the term sludge a lot, you know, sludge it, rock, whatever.
Very sludgy.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of, it was a lot of punk angst and, you know, energy and anger in there too.
Yeah. And that came across, you know, I think when I was really young, you know, I was in my
20s. You're still really young. Yeah. I love when someone 32, you're like 33, I think.
I got some gray, bro. I'm 33, yeah. I turned 33 in a week. Shit.
Hey, better gray than bald. You get no sympathy from me.
Hey, it's coming, dude. I'll be there shortly.
Join the club. It's so funny. Sorry, man. No, you were young good. Then. Go ahead. You were.
Oh, yeah. I was just seeing, you know, I think what happened, I was kind of writing. I wasn't as confident, I don't think, in the music that I feel like I'm best at writing. And a lot of our peers at the time were in really heavy bands. Like Denver has a very big metal scene. And like, maybe I was trying to almost like write to please, you know, the local scene and think what like other people would like. Not saying that these are bad records. I'm very proud of them. They're all like a stamp in time, you know, of like where I was at that moment. But what changed, I think, was between, you know, that second and third record was, I got a little bit more comfortable in my guitar playing, my songwriting, and also vocally singing, where we wanted to kind of do more clean vocals while still being a heavy rock band. And also we, that third record, the last two records, we went to a new producer engineer, Dave Otero, who really helped us kind of achieve what we were going for.
Okay.
So where we're at now, this last record too, I think is exactly where I want to be. It's the most honest form personally of my songwriting, of the band's songwriting. And I'm just really happy with the gradual progression of where we're at right now.
You know, I give you a lot of credit for having the courage to take sort of a leap of faith to do that, because it takes courage to do that. You know, it's real easy to keep doing what you're doing, and it's challenging to say, you know, get out of my comfort zone. This is what I feel like doing. And what you said, as far as like you're doing what you thought you should do, I've had a lot of, you know, top engineers and producers on the show, and they said one of the most common problems they have when they're working with major artists, and I've heard this even about, I had Michael Beinhorn, the guy that produced Soundgarden, Brain Fart, the big album,
Super Unknown.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
And he said when Chris came in, he had all these songs, and it's very common, he said, for an artist, one of the challenges as a producer is they have a hit record, and then they feel they have to, their fans want that same thing, so they have to do that instead of like what you did. You said, hey, I wanted to be myself, I wanted to step out, and I felt this is where I needed to be. And that, it's, you know, it's tougher to do that on your own than when you have, you know, some big time producers saying, hey, you need to do this. So I really give you a lot of credit, man.
Hey, thanks, man. Yeah. I appreciate it. It's also a lot harder, you know, with, I get where like Chris was coming from, because, you know, they have all that success behind them and, you know, big record label push, and there's a lot more pressure when you start getting, you know, record sales involved. But I mean, I think we're at right now with In the Dark, this last record, it's our best record for sure. And it's, you know, it's getting, you know, the attention that I think it deserves and will continue to get. So I think kind of realizing that, you know, we got our label supporting us 100%, and, you know, press kind of kicking off too, with people really digging it. So I mean, I kind of think that it was the right choice.
And yeah,
for me, I feel a lot more comfortable just in, you know, in my own shoes, writing and playing, you know, this style of music more so than the crazy punk shit we were doing.
Well, it was like between the third and the fourth album, it was almost like you said, okay, I'm all in on this now. Like the third album, you sort of like tested the waters, and then it was like, okay, I'm in. And then like you just wrote 11 songs that are freaking amazing, and you guys all crushed Thank them, you. You know? Was there anything different going on in your life? Like when you, I don't know, like, did you fall in love or something, or did you break up? Was there like a life event that coincided with that?
The pandemic.
Okay. So pandemic. How did that impact you?
I'm just so glad that you like kind of heard it too. Cause like between, like you can hear between 2 and 3, like that change. But then this one was like 3 and 4, like, all right, yeah, we found it.
Yeah.
And what? Yeah. So that's kudos, dude. Thanks for listening and digging. So this record, we changed a lot of stuff in the writing process. First 3 records, we would write in the room together for the most part. You know, we'd bring in a riff or something, but a lot of times we just jam and be like, oh, it's a cool riff, and like sing a hook over it, you know, or just like gibberish of like a melody that you think would work. So when the pandemic hit, this was right when our last record came out, Modern Ways, in 2020, was May 1st, 2020. We had to cancel all tours. Couldn't support it. It was just like the worst timing. So many bands went through that shit. Yeah. So, but it, you know, we were stoked on that record and thought, you know, if we backed it, it was going to get some good publicity, which it still did. All right. But, regardless, we're like, what do we do now? So we pretty much went back to writing. Me personally, you know, instead of writing, we didn't get together in the room, right? We didn't really feel comfortable doing that. No one knew what the hell was going on with the pandemic.
Yeah.
So for writing this record, we did home demos. Like I beefed up the recording studio here that I'm sitting at in my room. And just wrote mainly by myself and would send out complete songs to my band for feedback with, you know, full instrumentation, get feedback from them. They'd be like, hell yeah, that's super cool. Where prior I might've like, you know, if you deliver just like a riff or something, or try and say, explain a song to the group, like I might feel a little self-conscious because it's not getting that full, full song kind of sound structure, how I really want it to do, how I really want it to come across, where just sitting here at my desk, I could come up with full songs and print them as full songs to the group, which I think really helped, refine my songwriting process. And it was just a cool new way to do it. And I think it's the future, how I'm going to continue to write. Cause where it helped me the most was vocally. I was able to, you know, write out a full song, pretty much, a couple of riffs, what I thought was close enough to, you know, get some hooks over it. And then I put down the guitar, which was number one. That was like the biggest thing. Cause it's so much easier to write a vocal melody, a vocal hook, when I'm not playing the guitar at the same time. It's kind of like doing
really
where you're doing that, where it's like, when I put down the guitar, I can, you know, focus on just the vocals and where they would sound best, I guess, where, you know, and then I pick up the guitar, and it's always a good sign where when I would try and play it live, I wouldn't be able to sing and play at the same time and have to do a lot of practice. That's to me is like a good sign of that the melody's decent.
Right.
It's not following the guitar. It's not following your strumming hand. So that helped me tremendously. And, I think the band in general too is, just helping write songs too.
Wow. So in the past, the guitar, the vocals supported the guitar. Now the vocals were leading and the guitar became the support of the vocals, is what it sounds like.
I think so. Yeah. It was, we also just came into the studio with full pre-production. So we had a really clear idea of how the record was going to sound. before even getting into the recording studio. So, hearing those vocals up front in a pre-production, you know, demo is so much helpful for not only our band, but also our record producer, Dave Otero, who's a genius in specifically like writing vocal hooks.
Right.
And his thing is like, if he helped us with our last couple records with vocals a lot with like hooks. Cause he's, you know, cause what his thing is if I can't come up with anything better, I'm not going to change it. And for the most part, you know, we kept it pretty similar to where the demos were at. You know, he's really good with adding harmonies and stuff like that. And he's always got like an ear for just like, I don't know, just some parts that we didn't put in demos, but for the most part, they were pretty on point, prior to coming into the studio.
So it sounds like you just came into your own as a writer and you just said, fuck it, I'm going to just be me and I'm going to do me here and let's see how that works. And it worked out great.
Yeah, for sure. That's why I kind of saying earlier was, you know, kind of the most honest representation of the band and the writing. So thank God for the pandemic.
Yeah.
That, you know, this happened because who knows what we'd be doing.
No, it's a lot of people got something good out of the pandemic.
Yeah.
Did you get COVID?
Twice.
Me too.
Yeah, you did.
I got it.
First time was real bad.
Me too. End of 2020. Was it the end of 2020?
It was, I think 2021, like the beginning.
Was
I was skiing and I got knocked out, dude. You got it bad too?
Oh, really bad. I lost 20 pounds. Just sitting in bed recovering for 2.5 weeks. And I'm not like overweight. I got up and I remember like the first day I get up and my wife looks at me. She goes, you better look in the mirror. I'm like, why? What? And it was like, it wasn't like, yeah, man, I lost 20 pounds. It was like the pre-death look.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was like,
scary, man.
I guess it was just energy to recover. I don't know. How about you?
That was the hardest part for me too. Like I had like 103 temperature for like 3 days. I could not break it and just sweating bullets all night. So weak, but like I broke the temperature after a week, but like you were saying that like 2 to 3 weeks after, like I was so tired.
And yeah.
It took like a whole month, maybe even longer to like fully recover from it. But yeah, man, I got the second time I got it. Like I wouldn't even have known I got it, but I was exposed and tested myself and I was fine, but hopefully no more, man. Cause that shit sucked.
Yeah. My second was the same way. It was like COVID light. You know, I got it on Tuesday.
Yeah,
it was gone. It was gone on Saturday. I was like, after that first one, I'm not that shit, you know? And I remember
still like working out.
Yeah. I honestly, yes. But I remember the first one, my wife was freaking out because I've never shared this on the show. Apparently one morning I wake up like noon or something. She says, "Hey, are you okay?" I'm like, "Yeah." She goes, "What was going on this morning?" I'm like, "What do you mean?" So apparently at 5 a.m., I got out of bed, I turned all the lights on in the bedroom and my wife looks at me and says, "Hey, like what's going on?" And I'm like, "You see those holes in the wall?" There was no holes in the wall. She goes, "Yeah." Whoa. She goes, I said, "Someone's got to fix them and it's going to be me." So she calls my son like immediately, like as soon as she wakes up, who's your age. And he's like, she's like, "Nick, dad is hallucinating. What the fuck do I do?" And
dude, that's scary.
But I wasn't sleeping because I had it in my stomach bad. So like when around 10, 11 o'clock would come, everybody would go to bed. I was in agony because my stomach. So I was up almost all night. I'd fall asleep 4 or 5 a.m. So I was hallucinating, excuse me, because I wasn't sleeping, not because I was nuts. I mean, I might have been, but it was primarily because I wasn't sleeping. So it was
terrifying.
And she's like, "What are you talking about?" I'm like, "Well, I don't remember any of it. Thank goodness." But anyway, yeah, man, dude. Yeah. Three times is not a charm. I'm good with two.
Yeah. Let's fingers crossed. No more.
Hey, I want to talk to you about some of my favorite Abrams songs, Zach. On the third record, see, this is where it's like started. You got a great song on there called Pale Moonlight. And in general, you're a very good songwriter as far as building climax, you know, building tension and letting it go. And then you do a great job guitar wise, you know, providing that sort of relief, you know, releasing that tension against the lyrics and the melodies. And I thought you really did a great job honing your craft in there over those last two records. But is there anything in particular that you did? I know the process was different, but was there anything else that you did to build your writing muscle?
Yeah, that's a good question. I love that song, man.
It's great.
Yeah, the goal was, you know, with the last two records was to be more dynamically different. So we, you know, first two records were on 10 raging the whole time. We're, you know, we really want to, I love songs that, you know, have both the heavy loud and also the chill, calm, quiet, which I think the Pale Moonlight song really kind of succeeds at, where it hits harder at the end. If you're a patient listener and you listen to full records or full songs, which is hard to find these days because everyone has like 10 second itis.
I always, to me, this guy or this band or this woman is taking me on a journey. Let me see where it goes.
Yeah, for sure. So if you're in for the journey, that's what I am in for with music and songs, and song does a good job of it, where I think a lot of the times, like when I write those type of style songs, like I kind of bring out the loop pedal. So I'll like loop that cool little opening riff. I remember doing that, and kind of just improvising over it and seeing, you know, what else comes next naturally, you know, just kind of just jamming off it and seeing how it progresses with it. Cause that's kind of how I write my solos a lot too, especially with that song. You know, I'll get that heavy riff going and I'll loop it, and then I'll just start shredding. And then an hour later, you know, my roommate will be like, dude, shut the fuck up.
I'm an artist, man.
Yeah. I'm like, you're not feeling it too, man? Like, isn't this sick?
That's awesome.
that's how I like to write those songs, is kind of just messing around and just like experimenting with different pedals and getting inspiration from tones, really, and making a lot of, like, you know, stank faces.
Yeah,
is a
yeah.
good sign when you're writing a solo, I think. So it's like, all right, that'll
do. That's interesting. That's a good thing. I'm going to keep that in mind. So you just run a loop over and over again and create from that. I think that's really clever.
Yeah.
Also, the closing in that track is phenomenal. If you remember what guitar you were playing through and what wah pedal you were using.
Yeah, my
your secret weapon.
My secret weapon is the wah, but the guitar was my Jazzmaster. I got like one of the American standard Jazzmasters. It's like a 2018, 2017. When I got that, dude, I was all about Fender, because I was a huge Gibson guy for the longest time. And then I got the Jazzmaster, and I just love, I don't know, that instrument is super dynamic. It has amazing cleans, but it also has the ability to take pedals really well. And I'm a huge Dinosaur Jr. fan.
Yeah. You
know, Jay Maskus.
Yeah, he's great. I like that.
He's a Jazzmaster guy. So I was like, I want a fucking Jazzmaster. So I bought myself one. I went into a Guitar Center one day looking for strings. I came out with a new Jazzmaster, but it was this beautiful, it's this beautiful one. It's like a seafoam green. It's got like sparkles on it. Oh, and like it looked at me. So I like was jamming it. I was like, fuck it, I'm just going to buy it.
That's awesome.
It's one of my favorite guitars that I still, it's, you know, we record with it all the time. But the wah, my secret weapon, is the Cry, it's a Dunlop Crybaby, but it's the bass wah. It's that white bass wah.
Okay, so
just sounds
that.
Write this down, dude. Get it.
I am.
You gotta get it, because like when I, it's my secret weapon for soloing. Because to me, it's like a gas pedal. Like you press on it, and when you got the distortion and throw some like reverb or delay on it, you sound so much better than you actually are. You're just absolutely like it can like hide some of the, you know, some of the flubs or, you know, missed notes. And it's just, to me, that like, that's my go-to when I'm trying to like, fake that I'm actually like a shredder.
You're a good guitar player, man.
Like, thanks, man. But so, it definitely helps in, you know, with the solos.
So the white, okay. So how does the bass wah, this is first time anybody's told me that they're using a bass wah. So I need to, how is that different? Yeah.
It's different than their like standard Dunlop Crybaby wah, where what I like about it is the regular like guitar wah, or at least the ones that I've used, I haven't really liked the frequencies or somewhat like a little too high and like a little harsh on the ears. But where the bass wah, I think, takes those higher frequencies well on guitar. But the coolest feature about it was typically with the regular guitar wah, you have to like step down on it to initiate it. Where the bass wah is like, so here's the pedal. Right. It's already lifted like this to engage the pedal. You really just have to like that. You don't have to like click it on.
It's optical. It's just like, it's optical.
Is that
what
it is?
Yeah. That's cool. Cause I have a problem doing that as well. Cause I'm like, as we've talked, I'm not really a gear guy. So I need to put the car in the engine, turn the fucking key, and then know I can go. I don't have all the, I have a George Lynch Morley, and the reason I have it is kind of the same thing. Most wahs, they scoop out the good part of the tone.
Yeah.
And this one doesn't do that. It gives a pretty wide range, and it's nice. Optical also. It's just, you step down, you're good to go.
Yeah, I had so many problems where with old wahs, I would, you know, I would not be able to turn it off, and I'd be like, what the fuck is wrong with my tone? And not realize that my wah is still on.
Yeah.
And, you know,
how annoying is that?
It's annoying. So, I mean,
yeah.
And I just got one of the mini ones too. I actually stole my bass player's. He had like the gigantic one, which I think sounds better, but I got the mini one, which is very pedal board friendly. So, you know, you can save space on it, and it doesn't sound as good as the normal one, but it works.
I've had two conversations with you. I'm like down like $300 now in gear.
It's an expensive hobby, man.
what were you playing through? What did you record through, if you remember?
Yeah. Amp choices. Then for that song, I have an early 80s high watt. It's like a 1981, which is like my favorite amp. I was using that. It's just like a really great clean tone amp. It's loud as hell. It's got a lot of headroom, but, it takes pedals very well. I use it live this day. Paired that with a Sun Model T, which is, you know, it's like an early 70s. So they're pretty rare and they're going for a lot of money these days. But those two amps together are just like, I don't know. It's just insane. It's like way too much for the clubs we play, but, tone's tone, man. Like I gotta have it, you know.
Yeah.
Gotta play with it.
So this must be pretty cool for you playing amps older than you.
So cool.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
They're like you were saying earlier, they're a bitch to maintain, you know.
Yeah.
It's like $500 just to maintain it a year, changing tubes, getting it cleaned. But they're built, I mean, it's a testament to how they're built, right? These are 40, 50 year old instruments, and they're, you know, my Fender Reverb breaks all the time and it's 2 years old. So it's just like, it's just a testament of the craftsmanship of, you know, the era, and it's a great product.
Interesting you say that, because Fender has a new line, Tone Master or Treasure Tone? It's their new line of reissued older amps.
Okay.
Right. Like a Princeton, and they have, and yeah. it's digital, but they've done a great job recreating it. I was looking at them, and there were comments on there about how a lot of them have broken already. And it's like, they're less than 2 years old. You know, it's a piece of computer equipment.
Right. They have the chips, and they mass produce them in like Mexico or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, people say they can't tell the difference between like point to point, you know, hand wiring compared to just like the chips that they use, and like they do a good job, they get close, but like I've had a number of newer modeled like twin reverbs, the reissue twin reverbs, and I've played some from the 80s and the 70s, and those older amps, they just sound so much better. Like they're not as harsh on the ears. They're like, I don't know, they just seem to be better, I guess.
I think it's a feel. It's a feel. I'm with you. Body Pillow off the new record. That is, you guys are kind of like, there's too many categories, man, but
it's a good thing.
But there's some of your music is shoegazy, but not in a rock way,
right,
you know?
Right. This is our shoegaze song.
It's like a very dreamy, spacey song, but I thought you did a great job. You did a great job of using space, you know, and just some great crescendo in there. To me, it was like almost like an anthem song, like a psychedelic rock anthem. How did that song develop, and what is it about?
Yeah, one of our favorites, man. So our other guitar player actually came in. His name, Patrick Albert's fantastic guitar player. We love having him. He just joined for this record. This is our first record as a four piece. So he came in with the meat and potatoes for what would become Body Pillow, these two riffs really. And I was like, dude, I love these riffs. I remember he was kind of self-conscious about it. He's like, I don't know if this is us. And then we were all collectively like, yeah, I don't know. And I kind of just one day demoed it out and got really inspired with it. And, you know, especially vocally, I did the vocals for that track. And, I think that I'm so glad we went through it, 'cause we were like, is this an Abrams song? I don't know. It's kind of going on that past kind of thing we were talking about, you know, having the confidence to kind of chill out a little bit, where this song definitely, when we finished it, we were like, yeah, we can do this. We can succeed at writing this type of music where it's, you know, kind of dreamy. It's still heavy just because it's chill and like laid back. It's like, you know, I mean, I think, I don't know, like Bruce Springsteen's Nebraska is one of the heaviest records, and it's just him and a guitar recording on a four track. Like just cause it's like a, you know, chill kind of song, it can still be heavy. And it's one of our heavier songs where, it gave us the confidence to kind of go off of those dynamics and be able to chill out. But, lyrically, I was really excited to like, you know, put words and melody over it. I just love the look. It's very catchy. What it's about, I don't really know. What I do kind of know, it, to me, it's like a love story that never really was, you know, where it's like, what if I gave a little bit more? What if they gave a little bit more? You know, and the sad tragedy is that person didn't.
You didn't, yeah.
Didn't, and it's just, you know, it's like, whatever, move on to the next.
Yeah.
Swipe left. That dream. Yeah, swipe left, exactly. Swipe left next. But it's got that like dreamy kind of state of like what could have been, you know?
Right, right.
Which I think it the lyrics and the melody fit really well over the vibe of the riff.
Totally. It's funny. I was listening to an audiobook the other day when I was walking, and I always wondered this, but I don't participate in it. You know, I've been with my wife 30 years almost. But I hear everybody saying, thanks. Thank you. It's my best accomplishment, you know? And if you knew how difficult I was younger, it's actually her best accomplishment that she survived. They said that the reason why people don't want to commit today is because you look at this app and you're like, you know, it's kind of like when you walk into a guitar store and you're like, well, shit, if I take this one, that means I can't have that one. And if I take that one, I can't have that vintage Les Paul. Apparently the psychology is when you have all of this accessibility, it's like, well, I'll test this one out, but I'm not, you know, there's a lot more here I need to test. I never thought of that because I'm not part of that sort of dynamic.
That's really interesting. And I might be biased because I am a single guy.
Right.
I have been for a couple of years, actually. I haven't been in a long relationship for, you know, a while. Like, I mean, my longest relationship was probably about like 3 years or so. But yeah, man, there's a lot of accessibility and there's a lot of like, I just remember, you know, being in relationships, it's like, well, what if I wasn't? What if I was over there with that? There's like,
yeah,
it's a crazy world we live in. Everything's so fast paced, you know, uh-huh. It's not even a 24-hour news cycle. Like it's a 60-second news cycle
with
how fast information can spread along. And like now these Gen Z kids, like God bless them. Cause who knows what the hell, you know, like that just everyone just staring at their screens all day. But,
yeah. Well, it's interesting you say that because my two sons are old. They're close in age too. My daughter's 22, and both of them separately on different occasions have come to me and said, you know, I'm really glad I didn't grow up in Sam's era, my daughter, because I actually know how to talk to people. You know, like you're in sales. I mean, how much of a value is that having that skill set? It makes the whole difference between, you know, everything,
for sure.
You know, professionally. And
I mean, completely.
Yeah.
Is that your 22-year-old is the younger one?
She's young. Yeah. And she, I remember when she was a kid, I don't know, man, she's probably like 11, 12. I walked into her room one day and there was three girls there, but the four girls together, they're all on their phones talking to other people.
That's
and I'm
ridiculous.
Like, that's so, I'm like,
I find myself. Sorry.
No, I agree with you. It's so ridiculous.
I find myself in those. I'm sure you find yourself in those situations too, where it's like, all right, you know, hanging out with buddies or something, going to grab a drink or mm-hmm. a brewery or something. And then realize like, wait, everyone has their phone on the table. And then everyone's like, guys, we're here to, let's just, I hate it, man. I love having like every answer in my pocket, but like, I feel like I don't need it.
Right.
And it's a great way to communicate with people, especially for bands too, you know, like, you know, it's awesome, but I think it's, it seems like it's hurting more than it's helping these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree with you.
I love talk. I love having, even though we're in a, like we get to talk, have a conversation through a screen,
right?
Which is awesome. But like, I love having that human interaction and speaking with.
Yes, know, I agree with you.
Having that experience,
I agree with you, man. When I go out with my wife, we always try to put the phones down. Also, we don't have to think about the kids because they're texting us, and that's like,
right.
So it's no stress.
In
the dark, which is the title track of the new record. I love the bridge in the middle. I thought your playing was phenomenal. What made you pick that as the title track? And is there a backstory to that song?
Yeah, that, going into writing the record, we didn't really have like a concept or anything, but you know, when I looked back at the lyrics and I was like, there's definitely like a common theme. And I think that song, kind of has an overarching theme for the entire album where a lot of it, you know, there's lyrics in there that's like, go about saying stuff like, you know, I'm not feeling uncomfortable in your own skin, which is kind of like a little bit of stuff that I've been going through lately. Just kind of, you know, hold your head up high, but you know, you'll get through it. Kind of the ups and downs, ebbs and flows of just life. And it just felt like it fit thematically as a concept for the record. And I think it's a cool title.
It is a great title. And last one I wanted to ask you about, I mean, I could ask, I literally have like every song in that record is five star. I've gone through already like 10 gym workouts with it.
It's a good workout record.
Oh, it's a phenomenal workout record. Black Tar Mountain. That is just an epic track. But I was, is that like a heroin reference? Because, you know, Black Tar, is that?
Yeah, it is. It started actually, I was telling you, like we have trouble naming songs. So we would write a riff and I'd be like, oh, this sounds like this band. To me, that riff, when I first wrote it, it's like, it sounds like Black Mountain. It's a great, you know, like heavy psych band.
I know that band.
It's been around for a minute. Great band. And I was like, this is like if Black Mountain wrote an Abrams riff. And then we were jamming it one day and then our drummer was like, Black Tar Mountain. And I was like, oh, that's the sickest name ever. So I kind of wrote lyrics kind of going off of what I would think that would be like, but it's kind of like it's an addiction story.
Yeah.
You know, I like the lyric in there. It's something about like, the day shades block the sun. I remember like having some friends who got into that shit. And like, I went over there one day and it's just like, it's a beautiful day outside. You go inside, all the shades are blocking the sun, you know, and everyone's just like sleeping. I'm like, I gotta get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, that's kinda a scary place to be.
Kind of how that song went.
It's a great track. Great track, man.
Thanks, man.
Did you ever consider doing something else, or did you sort of know this was going to be my path, being a musician?
I didn't know I was going to be in a band, really. You know, and so like when I started getting the confidence and like, oh shit, we can write songs and do this, hell yeah, then I went full bore. Other than that, you know, growing up I had a huge passion. You know, my brother and I were big baseball guys. You know, we played high school baseball. It's huge in Southern California, same in Florida.
Yeah.
You know, no one wants a 5'8" guy is not going to make the pros. So better figure out how to do something.
Well, you've got your right spot, man. You found the right place.
Thanks, man.
Zach, what were some of the low points, maybe, or dark periods you had to deal with in life, and how'd you get through them?
Yeah, that's a good one. Well, kind of touching on, you know, how I was talking about In the Dark, the lyrics and like thematically, you know, I feel like everyone kind of struggles with mental health, especially as of late, with, you know, just access to everything. Everything's flashing between your eyes. And, you know, I definitely go through some struggles, ups and downs in life, man. You know, that I try and keep myself pretty even keeled these days. And, you know, if I'm in a dark spot, got to realize that, you know, I've got a lot of good things in life. I've got close friends, a lot of close family members that I'm super thankful for. And I do take that for granted a lot of the time. But realize that, you know, that don't get too low. Also don't get too high.
There you go.
Cause you know, there's the ups and downs, man. Without the lows, you won't have the highs. Without the highs, you won't have the lows. So it's just kind of the way life is. And I putting pen to paper really helps me kind of get through that shit. I feel blessed with where I'm at, you know, as a human with my family and friends. So I try not to take it for granted.
That's awesome, man. Thank you for sharing that. You know, I had a guest on my show and I don't remember who this was, but they said something that was one of the best things I heard. They said, it might've been Phil Collins from Def Leppard. I'm thinking about it, but he said something like, I said, what was the most important lesson you learned? He said, something to the effect of, it's never as bad as you think and it's never as good as you think. You know, like if you're really in the dumps, don't worry, it's going to come around. And the same thing, don't take yourself too seriously. If it's really going great, life is life and you're going to get slapped on the ass at some point. So just, you know.
Yeah.
And I had someone else say, which I really love, take what you do seriously, don't take yourself so seriously. And I think that ties in. Yeah, I think that ties in with that. So yeah, I feel you on that, man.
That's great advice, man. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, that's why I do this, to learn, because I'm basically a sponge on everybody else's good ideas for mental health.
So cool.
Your Jazzmaster, is that your go-to guitar right now?
It was.
Until you fell in love with another one.
Yep. I swiped right. my new baby is, I got a Gibson Custom Shop, non-reverse Firebird.
Okay.
Which is my first custom shop guitar. Dude, this thing is the most beautiful guitar I've ever played. It just looks beautiful. It sounds even better than it looks.
Do you have it
it's
there?
Definitely the most. It's downstairs.
Oh, okay.
I can go grab it. You want me to grab
no,
it?
No, I don't want you to go downstairs. Okay. No. Thank you anyway.
I don't want to go downstairs either. Thank you. But trust me, it's gorgeous. And I'm a Gibson guy now. I switch back between Gibson and Fender all the time. And this thing, I bought it. It's the most expensive guitar I ever bought. And when I bought it, like, I'm not even going to bring it to shows locally, but you know, we start jamming with it. I'm like, I'm playing with this thing live, but I probably won't bring it on the road. Too many horror stories of getting, you know,
yeah, that's,
and stuff like that.
But. Or getting stolen even, man. Now, I mean, with, you talk about mental illness, it's like, there's more theft and robbery. This is like the 70s in New York City, man. It's like not good.
Yeah. That's what I'm really scared about. So yeah, I don't want to bring it out.
It's a non-reverse Firebird.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a non-reverse based off the 1965 model. Yeah. If you don't know what I'm talking about, look it up.
It's got this
beautiful like Maestro bridge on it. So I can do my, you know, Neil Young, like, shakes on the whammy bar. Ugh, and it stays in tune. I played Firebirds that just don't stay in tune because they have those shitty like banjo tuners on it. But this thing is
banjo.
Dude, yeah.
So rules. That's your new number one. What's number two and three?
Jazzmaster moved down to number two. that thing's great. But below that would probably be my Telecaster. Fender Telecaster. It's like a 2005. I put a new bridge pickup in it. I put in a Billy Gibbons. It's a Seymour Duncan Billy Gibbons single coil that kind of has, sounds like a humbucker almost. So it beefs it up. What I didn't like about the Tele was it was just too harsh for my playing, for the songs I play, where it kind of just like, it's just a greater, better frequency. But yeah, I love that guitar so much.
It's so interesting.
It's all white too.
Not a lot of people in your, you like white guitars. Is that, what color is your custom shop? Is it white?
The custom shop is like that vintage Sunburst.
Okay.
I wish it was white, but that'd probably been like $2,000 more guesses, the color.
It's interesting that you play a Tele and a Jazzmaster and not a lot of people in your sort of genre play that.
Yeah.
You see mostly, you know, Strats and conventional, you know, Les Paul kind of, or SGs.
Yeah, a lot Strats, SGs. Les Pauls, SGs, all that like stoner rock shit, you know, which is cool. I mean, I got an SG, I have a Strat. I love those guitars, but I think I just like the way they feel, the way they play and the way they sound. To me, I just prefer them, but I change all the time, man. It's like, it's nice to have options. Like,
yeah.
I never sell any guitars. I'm a hoarder.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. I've never sold a guitar. I've never traded a guitar. So I kind of just like, I have like seven. I don't have a lot, which is, I'm building up.
You're building, you know, but you're building like a good quality collection. That's what counts.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Any interesting stories or cool stories about how you acquired any of these guitars?
My aunt gave me a Strat, actually.
Wow, that's a nice.
It's cool, man. It's like she wasn't playing it and she knows that I play all the time. She's like, do you want this Strat? I'm like, what is it? It's like a mid-90s American Strat that I actually have right here. I'll show you in a sec.
Yeah.
It actually came. I hope that she doesn't listen to this because like it came in like the worst like royal blue, like Dodger blue. Like it sounds great. It sounds so good, but like I hated the paint on it. So
Dodger
I
blue. I've never heard that. That's so funny.
It's so bright. Check out what I did to it.
Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
Aunt Nan. All right, so here it is. I like shaved it down.
Oh, wow.
To a natural wood, which just, it looks sick.
Yeah.
I kept some of the blue on it.
Yeah, that it looks relicked, man.
Yeah, so it's like, I mean, imagine the whole guitar that blue. It was just like way not my style and like too loud, but like it looks kind of cool.
I like that. So you literally just sanded a whole thing down. That's not an easy process because you have to be patient.
Well, my buddy is a luthier.
Oh, okay.
So he's got like a bunch of like pro sanders and like he put me to work though, dude. It's not an easy job.
Oh, it's not.
But no, it turned out good though. He put a little like lacquer finish on it and it still sounds killer.
Very cool. That's a nice gift. Very nice gift.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Do you have a worst gig ever story?
Shit, man, we can drink a lot. worst gig would probably be like, dude, one that sticks out. We were opening for a pretty big band from Denver, who's gotten even bigger. I don't know if you're familiar with a band called Chemist. K-H-E-M-M-I-S.
I have a note to talk to you about them after the show.
Oh, cool.
I swear to God. Yeah. How weird is that?
Nice, yeah. Dude. They're good friends, you know, of ours. We opened for them at one of their like album release shows. It's a sold out show at the Larimer Lounge. It's, you know, it's like holds like 300 maybe. And we were direct support. We weren't able to sound check that day. And for some reason, someone was wrong with my pedal board and like a couple pedals like blew out or something. And I basically wasn't able to use it. And at the time that pedal board was like our lead singer. Cause I mean, it's just like, I'm playing a clean amp, right? I'm playing like a clean amp. I was playing a Model T at the time. So I was like, all right, I got to go naked for this show and just play. I cranked up the Model T to try and get like some distortion, but like, just didn't. You know, we use a lot of delay, a lot of reverb, a lot of shit like that. And so we played our whole set without my pedal board, which was kind of cool. It's like, what are we going to do? Not play? I mean, it was still badass, but like, it didn't sound like us. Someone said it's like, it sounded like if like, you know, like a Discord Records band, like Fugazi or something, is like, you know, which is one of my favorite bands. Like, that's cool. We'll take it. But
yeah,
that sucks, dude. It sucks when you like, have technical issues and she's got to figure it out on the spot and not panic, but we panicked.
And everybody has them at some point in time.
Oh yeah. All the time.
Zach, give me your top three Desert Island Discs.
Oh shit. Mark Lanegan, Bubblegum, my favorite record of all time. My favorite singer of all time.
Great voice.
Rest in peace.
Yeah.
I'll do Neil Young, After the Gold Rush. And let's throw in Songs for the Deaf, Queen of the Stone Age.
Yeah, good record.
Those are my like three favorites, I think.
Did you ever listen to Lanegan when he was at Screaming Trees? It's a little bit.
Yeah, dude, yeah. That got me into it.
Yeah.
He's my favorite artist ever. I just finished his book. It's a fucked up read. I recommend it.
Is it good? I had.
It's really good.
Jeff Fielders was his primary guitar player.
Oh, yeah, his guitar player.
Yeah, Jeff was
fantastic
on the show.
Guitar player.
Yeah, that's lovely. Awesome. Really good guy. Yeah. All right, man. Tell me about a change you've made or a specific experience you had that changed either your outlook on life or changed the way you look at yourself.
The change I've made?
Yeah.
I don't know about a change that I've made, but a change that happened in my life that kind of woke me up a little bit. My grandmother recently passed.
I'm sorry, man.
Last, it's okay. February. But she was perfectly healthy, you know, and it was just a freak accident. Like she slipped on some ice in Detroit.
Oh my God.
And hit her head. And yeah, she would have lived, you know, 20 years. She was perfectly healthy. So, you know, shit like that kind of wakes you up. It's like, you never, no day is guaranteed. You know, cause like I said, she was perfectly healthy. And then a week later she was dead.
So really don't
take anything for granted, man. Oh no, thank you, man. She lived a fantastic life. I mean, she was like 86, 87.
But wow, it's so sudden really though. Healthy. And
it's like, you can't,
there's no,
it's so sudden.
It's almost like you expect just to give you a heads up kind of thing. And you know, death is not like that. Yeah.
Right. To be able to say goodbye is always, you know, preferred, but that's the thing. No day's guaranteed.
Yeah.
So you might as well do some cool stuff, you know, have fun, and don't like the advice you just gave me, you know, don't take yourself so seriously, but take life seriously, but you know,
yeah,
laugh at yourself.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, man. Best childhood memory.
I was telling you, as you know, we were big ball players, just the nostalgia of like Saturdays at the park.
Yeah.
That's like with all the friends, man, just like, I don't know, just like playing ball with the friends. Like we were really competitive. I mean, my brother and I still are competitive family. It's just the nature of us, but like just the nostalgia of childhood in general is, just reminds me of just the ballpark, really just like spend the whole day, like hitting dingers.
When you play with your brother, right, is there something, you know, like that connection between you that transfers into the music as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's got to be cool.
He played in Abrams, man, like the first record, and we toured a lot with him together, but, you know, he got onto other bigger gigs, but yeah, we have this weird thing where it's like, we don't even have to look at each other. Him and I can like improv really well together. It's like a weird thing, but like, you know, some people have that. I have that with, you know, my guys too. Like, but me and him specifically, like we're on like a different level.
Oh, that's gotta be next level shit, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Most important thing your dad taught you.
Sense of humor, laugh.
Very cool.
For sure. Yeah.
How about your mom? Most important thing she taught you?
Be on time.
That's important, she was, man.
Like, be on time. Be on time, dude. Get your shit done. Like, you know, don't overpromise and underdeliver. Like she's a boss, man.
Yeah.
So having those two kind of personalities, I think shape the way I am pretty good. And I'm grateful for those two.
That's awesome.
Those two psychos.
Do you have any hobbies outside of music or interests besides baseball?
Surf, snowboard. You know, I love sports, working out, you know, running, taking the dog out. But yeah, I love getting out and about, man. Actually going back to SoCal next week with my brother. We're going to do a bunch of surfing that I haven't done.
Oh, very cool.
In a while. So I'm excited to get back on the board.
That's great. I hope you guys have a good time.
Thanks, man. We will.
Just a couple of questions. Best advice you've ever been given, and who gave it to you?
One of my best friends. I was bitching about something, like, so I'm good at complaining, dude. That's just who I am. It's just like, I complain about the summer and the summer and the winter.
I'm good at complaining. Don't make that your dating profile, like, headline.
Oh, no. That's not a good idea. But
Zach, I'm a musician. I'm good at complaining.
Yeah, exactly. No wonder why I'm single. he gave me some great advice. I was bitching about something super mundane, and he was like, dude, we're on like a spinning rock. And like nothing matters, really. I'm like, oh, dude. That hits hard right now. Like,
yeah, thank
nothing,
you.
Nothing matters. Might as well just have some fun, brush it off.
Yeah,
it is hot out. Let's just deal with it.
That's funny, man.
Yeah.
I'm good at complaining. I was talking to this older woman a while ago, and she was telling me, you know, because I work out, and I've worked out for many years, but now, you know, some of the injuries have taken their toll. So I got aches and pains, and my wife does as well. And so we were talking about it, and she said, she was telling us a story about a woman she knew who was 104, and the woman was active and agile and, you know, robust and, you know, vivacious. And the woman, this 104-year-old, was telling her, she goes, look, if you're not in pain and you're not cranky with something in your body, it means you're not doing anything. And I was like, man. And so now anytime my wife or I, you know, my leg's killing me from my workout, it's like, hey, you could sit around doing nothing and your leg won't hurt, right? So that, what you said, that reminded me of that.
Yeah,
you know, about that's complaining. Good advice.
Gotta listen to your elders.
You listen to a 104-year-old. Yeah, I'll do that all day long. Yep. Last question, man. And thank you so much for everything. And I'm so happy for you guys with this record. And I really, I love it. And I really hope that it gives you the just desserts and everything you deserve. It's a wonderful record. And I hope it breaks you guys out. You know, it's thanks, fantastic, man. In the dark.
Appreciate it, man.
You're welcome. Most fun thing you've ever done?
So I was mentioning surfing. Most fun thing I've ever done is kind of a little naughty, but I went surfing on acid once.
Holy
the only
shit.
Time I've ever, the only ever time oh my I've, God. I've done, a, wow. done acid once, and I won't do it again, but that was like the coolest thing ever. I probably caught like two waves, but just, I was in the water for like 6 hours and just like taking it all in.
Wow.
My buddies in the summer. And I mean, I don't know. That was the funnest thing I've ever done in my life. And
that's wild.
You know, you don't need acid to have fun, but holy shit, that was a good time.
Yeah. I took acid only one time too. I took it at a Grateful Dead concert. Like how conventional. And, yeah. You know, I thought at the end of the night or the next day, I was like, I think everybody should do it once, because there is a lot of like, you got to keep your shit together when you're on acid.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's almost a challenge. Like, you know, are you going to lose your shit? Or are you going to, you know, keep it in?
It really is, man. I mean, I remember when I got out of the water, like shit started to turn south, and I'm like, it's just like way too long for me. Like,
yes.
I can't do anything for 8 hours.
No.
And drugs is definitely not one thing I want to do for 8 hours.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
But like that, for some reason, like I just like, people talk about like that, you know, existential experience where you're just like one with everything. And like, I was like sore from smiling because I was having that much fun just floating out there.
That's
in the sun,
great.
Man.
That's yeah, great, man. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, dude, thank you very much. Let me tell people where to find you, where to find the record. All right. The band is Abrams, A-B-R-A-M-S. You can find them on Twitter, on Facebook. Their website is Abrams Rocks, A-B-R-A-M-S, rocks.com. And you can find them on Instagram at Abrams the Band. Please follow them. And do you have a YouTube channel?
We do. It's Abrams the Band, I believe, too.
Awesome. And follow them on YouTube, Abrams the Band.
Yeah.
In the Dark, it's a phenomenal record. I mean, it's just a great record. I felt so good listening to it, man. And I've listened to it many times since. If you want to like feel good, get up and move, and just, you know, it's a deep record too, man. So, you know, you get in your head a little bit, and, you know, you're such a good writer with the climax and releasing tension. That's a good thing to, you know, it feels good to listen to it. And I wrote here, if you've taken a long drive in the car, you know, if you're working out in the gym, or I've just sat out on my patio smoking a cigar and just jamming to it. So it's a great record. And I hope, yeah. And also if you want, it's on all the streaming services, Spotify, Apple, et cetera, but if you want to support the band, the best place to do that is go to their record company, Small Stone, go to their Bandcamp, which would probably be bandcamp.smallstone.com.
Yeah, I believe so. You can just go to smallstone.com.
Okay.
Google Small Stone Recordings. You'll be able to find it there.
Yeah, they have a lot of great bands on this label. Abrams, one of them. Dude, any final words of wisdom?
Wisdom, I don't know, man. But just really thank you so much for having me. Really great talking with you.
Likewise.
Thanks for promoting the record, man. Saying such nice things about it. We're really proud of it. And yeah, if you guys like what you hear, share it with your friends and spread the word.
Awesome. You're touring the whole country, or where's your tour?
Right now we're doing a short tour just from Denver to California and back. It's a short one in November, about a week, but we're going to be doing a lot more 2023.
Awesome.
We'll hit the whole U.S. a couple of times. So
we'd be down here. Florida's a tough state to tour. It's so big.
Florida's hard, man. We've never played Florida.
It's tough.
We'll try and make it happen though, man. It's tough to make.
But, well, dude, if you're coming down here, Atlanta, you'll be expecting.
Atlanta's close.
Expect a phone. No, it's not close. expect a text from me. Man, thank you for everything. Yeah, for I wish sure. you best of luck with the record and touring with the band and everything, man. Thank you for your time. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this, please share it on your social media channels. We appreciate your support. Thanks very much to Zach Amster. Please listen to the new Abrams record. It's phenomenal. And thanks for spending time with us, Zach. And most important, remember that happiness is a choice, so choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar, and have fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. I am out. Zach, thanks for everything, brother.
Thanks, man.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Everyone Loves Guitar. If you did, make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com/subscribe and subscribe to the audio podcast and to our very active YouTube community. And if you have any comments, please write me at everyonelovesguitar.com/hello. We'll see you on the next episode. Until then, make sure you choose happiness. Relax and have as much fun as possible.